Bring out the talent.
Bring out the talent.
Bring out the talent.
Welcome to Bring Out the Talent, a podcast featuring learning and development experts discussing innovative approaches and industry insights. Tune in to hear our talent help develop yours. Now here are your hosts, PTA's CEO and President Maria Melfa and Talent Manager Jocelyn Allen.
Welcome everyone. This is Maria and thank you for joining us again today.
I am so excited, everyone. It's Jocelyn. We're glad to have you back again. Can I just say, we, you know, our listeners don't know this, but we get down to our intro, like super get down. We love this music. And I just have to say, our guest today absolutely passed the vibe check. She was dancing with us. I am so excited to get started.
I was just thinking the same thing, too. I'm like, oh, my God, Lynn has quite the positive energy.
It's fantastic. Love it.
And I didn't do the sprinkler. Sorry.
Love it.
That's a hard one to do.
I love it.
Popular roast.
Okay. Fantastic.
So today we're discussing a very interesting topic, change management in the workplace. So according to the Harvard Business Review, over 60% of change initiatives end in failure. Could this be part to leaders and employees lacking the guidance and support needed to fully embrace the change? A different study from McKinsey revealed that 70% of all change programs fail due to employee resistance and a lack of support from the management team. So what steps can an organization take to ensure a successful organizational change? In today's episode, we will discuss this. And we will also discuss the tools needed to be a successful change agent with our change management coach, facilitator, strategist, and owner of Core XP Business Solutions, Lynn Turner. Welcome, Lynn.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here. That music just really got to me.
So. Oh, I'm telling you, Lynn, like when I looked over and I saw you like doing the bounces of the beats, like on your screen, I was like, she wins. Like, yes, welcome, welcome, welcome. Part of the team, part of the family. Absolutely.
Yes. Some of our guests have looked at Jocelyn and I like we were a bunch of weird people when we were dancing on the
I felt you were
music.
My people.
Oh, yes. We literally, sometimes we tiptoe into it too, where we'll be like, you know, just like gentle sway, right? And then we're like, okay, this is all it's going to be. This is all it's going to be is the sway. And then other times we're just like, yeah.
Yeah. So this is full unleashing.
Yes.
And it's only Wednesday.
I know, right? And we're 6 minutes into the episode. So, oh, goodness. Lynn, you come with tons of experience, over 15 years in coaching and leadership consulting. What led you there? Where's your passion come from?
Actually, I hate to say it's longer than that. I hate to admit that, but honestly, my life has been a series of changes. Some I've intentionally created and others that have happened. So I think it's really about knowing how to embrace the change because change is a constant and knowing how to reinvent, which I think is really important in today's world. But the, you know, I was originally in medical. That's what my schooling was in medical. And at the time I was working part-time for a video production training firm of all things. Here we come full circle on the training. Mm-hmm. And they asked me to stay on. I was working for them part-time and going to school, doing the grind like a lot of people are. And I was a half credit away in an internship from graduation and they asked me to stay. So I had to make the big decision, right? That kind of threw me off. That was a change. I wasn't expecting it. And after some careful thought, I decided, you know what? I think I'd rather go in that direction. And they sent me to business school because they knew, you know, I had invested in the college. So I went to business school and from there just continued on. Did the corporate stint for a while, spent about a decade there. So I've lived it. I don't just come out and consult and facilitate on it. I've lived through some of these different changes, lived through mergers, acquisitions, you know, all those types of changes. And, you know, after going through the corporate one to start a family, and that's where I kind of took a little bit of a break. But after so much of Barney and Big Bird, I needed some intellectual stimulation. and actually got introduced to a family business management consulting group. And that person, honestly, she was my mentor and introduced me to coaching. Boy, do I wish I had coaching when I was in corporate. Would have made a lot of difference.
Yes. Absolutely. That's fantastic.
I love your outlook that, you know, change is a constant thing and that you live it. We live it every day. And that's what inspires you to bring it into every organization and help them lead through it. I agree. Absolutely.
So you mentioned, Lynn, that you have spent time working through mergers and acquisitions. And I know a lot of times when people think about change management, that's one of the areas they think about. What are other things that you work with companies for when they're experiencing change besides mergers and acquisitions?
Yeah, I think that's like the big one, right? When people think of change, but honestly, everything is changing, right? Everything in our world is changing, especially, right? I'm not sure if you're familiar with the term VUCA. Are either of you familiar with the term VUCA? VUCA actually originated out of the military. It was coming about at the time of all things at the end of the Cold War, and here we are. But our military at that time was looking at the enemy and saying, we don't really know who our enemy is anymore. And therefore, they were seeing the landscape as, and VUCA is an acronym for volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. And if that doesn't explain what we're currently living through, I don't know what does.
That explains it perfectly.
Absolutely. Now, going back a little bit too about, you know, the change for all kind of, at least that's what I'll call it, right? Because it's a constant in everybody's life. When we hear the word change management, it's thought of a competency that only exists or is reserved for top management, right? Like it is their job to make sure that everybody goes through it, you know, and comes out on the other side positively. But that being said, it kind of lends to the fact that this isn't just about top level leaders and how they're adapting to change. It's how other people are participating as well. So why do you think there is more of a focus, or do you see a shift in focus between change management for all levels versus just change management for C-suite, VPs, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a great question. And honestly, you know, the pivot from the C-level to everyone really relates to what I was just talking about with VUCA. It's not necessarily about the change, but it's really about the pace of change, right? So if you think about it, once upon a time, leaders had the luxury of time to make effective change. In today's world, change is being thrown at us much faster, and it's making that pace very hard to keep up with. So it's impossible for one individual, like a leader, or one level of individuals such as your leadership team to keep up with everything that's being thrown at you. You really need to make sure that your organization is able to deal with the change because it's constant. Literally just before I came on to the show this morning, I was working with a group. I'm working with their middle management right now. And one of the reasons that we're working with the middle management and we're starting with them first is the whole leadership team is new. They're all brand new. The CEO has just barely been there 2 years, and everybody else is new to that leadership team. So we're starting in the middle, and we're going to work our way back to the leadership team. But they all need to embrace it, and to be competitive, you really need to be agile in today's world.
So how long does a program typically take? And I know probably typically is not the right word. So this particular change initiative that you're working on, do you have any idea, like from start to finish, how do you go about doing it? Do you first meet with the key stakeholders, then break it out in groups? Do you meet with groups? Do you meet individually? And I know that's a long question, but you could just explain, you know, some of the areas on how you're handling this.
Yeah. And it really depends kind of on the organization too. So this particular organization is a little bit different, but I'll share with another organization that went through a merger acquisition. And again, kind of the same thing. The merger acquisition happened right before COVID. And as a result, you've had two different organizations, two different cultures coming together. And then they needed to add new people to that leadership team. They just needed new competencies. So it's almost like you're adding a third culture, if you will. And then when the pandemic hit, everything went remote. So this whole group, they didn't know each other. They were all new coming together. So the first thing that we did was we need to help these individuals get to know each other and build trust. Because if you don't have trust on your team, you don't have a team. So that was kind of that first step.
How do you do that? How do you work with them to build trust?
Yeah. And that was interesting too, because it was right at the start of right in the middle of it anyhow. So we were all remote. Some people had never met in person. And I'm about experience management. So while Zoom is great, and I love Zoom, and the Brady Bunch squares can be really fun and great, I wanted to engage them beyond that. So it was using different technology. I utilize a collaborative tool called to really help engage the group, because I'm a visual person. So I just learn better when I can see things and I can interact with them. And so it was really about creating different activities for the group to get to know each other, you know, get to know about each other beyond business, even, you know, what are their interests? I mean, one of the things that I had them do is, what would be the title of your book through the pandemic? You know, what would you title it? So you kind of get to know a little bit about the person and each other.
I love those sort of questions. I always respond to stuff like that really. I don't know. I invest my full self and I'm like, what would I name a book about the pandemic? Like, how would I market this? Is this the right decision? I think in creative ways, I think is a lot of what people embrace when it comes to change is making it fun, right? And thinking about it a little bit differently. You mentioned the pandemic, right? I'm sure that between your own programs and how you tackle these sort of initiatives and then the needs of your clients and how they changed, I'm sure the pandemic exacerbated a lot of those things. So what were some of the common areas that companies came to you needing help with adjustments for? I'm sure working from home, that hybrid team was one of them, but are there any other ones that we're maybe not thinking about that could tell people listening, hey, you might be missing the mark here?
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of the organizations, what I was finding anyhow, and where they were, you know, coming to me for, was really around kind of team reboots, if you will, getting the team back together. So doing a lot of team building, a lot of leadership development, communication, just communication is key. That's something that everybody's always constantly working on. One of the really big things too is, you know, you talk about the remote work and meetings. People are like have meeting exhaustion, especially now with Zoom. And it's how do you create meaningful meetings? Because a lot of meetings are just honestly poorly run and people are frustrated with back-to-back-to-back-to-back meetings, especially over Zoom. It's tiring. It's exhausting. So how do you make them more meaningful and engaging? And you know, I think people just kind of take it for granted that everybody knows what's on your mind and what you're looking to achieve, but you really have to put some steps in place.
So when you're working with an organization, are you typically working one-on-one or with groups?
A little bit of both. So, you know, I do one-on-one coaching. It depends on what the organization is looking for. Working with family business, where we're dealing with their transition from one generation to the next. So, you know, we do a lot of one-on-ones with them and then pull the groups together because people, you know, sometimes need that time to express themselves in a safe way and have a thinking partner as well. So spending some time there, that, you know, the psychological safety too, I would say is a big area that people are really focusing on and just making sure that everybody feels safe for that team building. Because without it, you're not getting into healthy conflict.
How do you go about establishing psychological safety? I know that's a term that we hear a lot now.
So much we're hearing it, yeah.
Yeah, so I do some assessments sometimes with people, and just even, you know, group sessions. I'm a big follower of Adam Grant. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Adam Grant. He's an organizational psychologist out of Wharton School of Business. And, you know, he's done some work. So they give you kind of these distinctions, you know, about, you know, when you stick your neck out, is it getting cut off? You know, just different things to get a pulse from the team. And sometimes doing these assessments, anonymous assessments, you know, do people feel safe, can be pretty eye-opening, you know, and sharing that with the group. So that the organization I was telling you about that went through the merger acquisition actually had them do the Patrick Lencioni's assessment on Teams. And obviously they were weak in trust and accountability. So those we knew were areas that we needed to work on. So we did specific exercises to focus on building the trust and developing accountability within the team.
So are there specific exercises? I know we have done some on trust. Are there specific ones just for accountability, or are those overlapping?
Yeah, I think you need to create kind of that team charter, right? So it's about having those rules of engagement, if you will. What are those behaviors? So one of the exercises that I had them do, and as I mentioned to you, I'm a visual person and I also do graphic facilitation. So kind of put out there this beautiful mountainous scene with the winding road and had the sunset, right? Or the sunrise, and the vision, had them create a vision for their team. What does high performance mean to you? So creating that vision, and they all picked like different, because we were doing it virtually and doing it over mural, they were able to pick images and had them talk to, what does that image mean to you with regards to your vision? So they were able to talk it through and hear from each other. Then the next thing we did was identified behaviors that support that vision and put those down. And then also identify behaviors that don't support that vision and identify those as well. And what actions will they take in order to help get themselves closer to that vision?
Sounds like a great exercise.
Very creative. Again, I'm thinking about it and I would love, I like looking at images for inspiration as a whole. So I think that's a really smart way to get people engaged and ready for something who normally wouldn't be prepared. I feel like the last several years, one has obviously opened like the floodgates when it comes to change management and setting those expectations for your teams. But what about the world that we're living in right now? That's kind of like that hovering point between the old normal of the last 2 years, the new normal of making that shift to some hybrid things, and then other places being totally ready to like rock and roll again, right? Normally, as they did before. Are you kind of repeating some of the same change management consulting that you're doing? Because at first you were helping people go to a remote world. Now maybe you're helping them go back to a hybrid. Maybe you're going back to in office. It's like you have change management for something that you are used to doing for decades, right? But all of a sudden you're going back to it after 3 years and you have no idea what to do. What does that look like?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. So one thing I'll share with you before kind of answering that is, you know, during the pandemic, well, even before the pandemic, was doing roundtables with diverse groups of businesses, you know, because it was non-compete. We wanted people to, again, feel safe and being able to share during the roundtables. And then when the pandemic hit, it was like, oh boy, now we've got to move to this remote world and do it all via Zoom. So we were doing it via Zoom. And the conversations got really interesting. So like I said, it was a diverse group of businesses. And what I was finding was like there were almost like these three camps of businesses. So you had those businesses that were already using technology, and this was just like another Tuesday for them of doing business, right? It was no big deal. And then, you know, so they adapted really well. There was no adaptation because they were already doing it. Then there was this other camp B where you had essential workers or you had manufacturing or construction where people need to be, you know, you can't do work remotely. in those situations. You need to be physically be there. And for those organizations, what they were finding is once they were able to get people into their physical location, they had control over that environment, right? So they could control the safety measures that they were taking with regards to the pandemic and social distancing and cleaning and all of that, and making sure that they were conveying those messages, communicating that to their employees so they felt safe, right? So they were able to do pretty well through the pandemic because they had control of their environment. Now comes this next camp. So and I think of this one woman business owner in particular. She had an insurance company. So everything went to remote. Originally, everybody's in the office. That's how they did their work. That's all that they knew. Now they had to pivot, go remote. She was a nervous wreck because she's like, because this is so new to them. And they really hadn't been prepared for working at home. She was more concerned about their emotional well-being because she's like, some of them are sitting in front of the TV, watching all this negative news or on the social media. So she got really concerned because there was no control, you know. So it becomes, what are those things in your control and what are those things out of your control when it comes to change management too? And how do you deal with it? So I don't know if I answered your question, but it made me think of everybody went through it very, very differently. And it's about recognizing that and the different emotions that people are going through.
That definitely answers my question because it really was about how certain groups were adapting, right? Because I think TTA was somewhere in the middle, right? Like we have always been in this virtual world, but not all of our world was virtual. So we easily pivoted to that virtual remote world, but it wasn't like that. I don't know. Was it, I don't want to say it wasn't instinctive because it was, but it took a second to sit back and observe everything and say, okay, here's how we're moving forward. Here's how we're going to pivot. We're going to continue to be an agile organization. And we worked as a complete unit to discuss how are we going to do this internally? And how do we make sure our customers and our resources know that this is how we're going to tackle the pandemic overall as it came to be. So it absolutely answers my question and indulges the different perspectives that come into play when it comes to change management and why having training around it and focus on your employees is so important.
Well, you just made it. So as I was listening to you talk, what was really interesting was the language that you were using. So first of all, you were saying, how can we do this? It wasn't like, why do we have to do this? It was, how can we? So that's more of a positive. You're coming from a more open mindset, which is important to recognize. So you guys were willing to, and that's a tribute to kind of the culture. And I've heard a lot about your positive culture. So kudos to you guys in moving together as that collective unit and getting people there. But it wasn't a matter of, as I heard you, it was more of how do we do this in experimenting, I guess I would say, and being open-minded, where some organizations, it was like, why do we have to do this? I don't want to do, there's that resistance to change. And I guess I didn't necessarily hear that in what you were saying, Jocelyn.
I didn't see it. No, absolutely. I think we've always been that way, agile, you know? And so it was just another, albeit it was scary for everybody, right? Because change that slaps you in the face like that is scary. And the fact that 100% of us were going through it together without any choice in the matter was scary, but our ability to think of it beyond TTA and saying like our clients, there are more of our clients than there are of us that are dealing with this. How do we help them get through it? That was the motivation. And because we're all on the same page and because of the culture that we've established, I will give kudos to our president and CEO, Maria Melfer. You might've heard of her. This is why we're able to go through it as a team, because it's a safe place to dictate, you know, disclose what our concerns are, but everybody, because we're collaborative, someone comes out with a solution that we can follow. So yeah, absolutely.
Yes. And I will definitely speak to a few of the different changes. So of course, the physicality where we all had to work from home, and that's really changed the way that I have thought of things. And now we're permanently a hybrid work place. And there are, you know, people that will come in one day a week, people come in one day a week, every other week, people come in every day. So people really get to choose on what works for them. I do like to have, you know, because I've thought, okay, do we ever want to close the office, you know, now, because I know that everybody can get their work done from home, but I do like to have a meeting place that we could come and collaborate. And that was like one thing that I was a little nervous about, because we do have such an incredible group of people that work so well together. And we all truly like care about one another. You know, everybody
we
has
like
great
each
intention.
Other.
We do. Like we like each other.
Out.
We have
oh
a lot
goodness.
Of fun. Like I've said before in other episodes, like maybe I have to hire people I don't like from going on because we do. I mean, we spend a lot of, you know, talking and time, you know, laughing, but, you know, we certainly are getting our work done. So it's not like, you know, we're just sitting here, you know, whatever, laughing and joking all day. But so that was like a first thing. Okay, how do we keep that culture intact if we're like, you know, working from home and we're all on Zoom? And we tried to, like a lot of companies, you know, have these like happy hours or do like fun virtual events and stuff like that. And that like helps some way. So that's it. But, you know, here it is. It's several years later. We're used to it now. And, you know, it's definitely, I hate to say the new normal, because I hate that term. But
we want to reject all the pandemic phrases.
We want to do that. But even more importantly, we lost about 70 to 80% of our business overnight within a week.
Yeah.
So because our business was a lot of virtual, in-person training. And a lot of our clients were not ready for that. So there was like a few weeks where I was extremely stressed out, of course, because I'm like, oh God, what are we going to do now? But we just, I shouldn't even say like a few weeks, maybe like just like a few days. I usually turn around like quick. Like there was like probably like one night I'm at home going, oh my God, what does this mean? What does this mean for the future? But we just kind of like, you know, worked on this together. You know, we were very transparent and said, okay, this is what's happening. You know, we're just going to work on this. We started pivoting to, you know, a lot of virtual training. And we had some very large clients that had a lot of large international projects. And some of them completely shut down. Right. Some of them completely shut down forever. Some of them, they within time were able to change that to a virtual delivery. So in several months, we were able to, you know, quickly like pivot quickly. You know, we started working on a lot of, because we do a lot of instructional design. So we started creating a lot of content for virtual delivery. So it obviously brought opportunity in that area. We started working on having more webinars, which I know a lot of companies did. And we saw that the success in that, especially driving a lot of lead generation. And so, yeah, so here we are at like a few years later, and we learned to, you know, be more efficient, change our model where it works, keep things that are still working, and that's about it.
And then here we are.
And here we are. So,
but that's the thing, Maria, too, is that it's always been flexible. Like, you know, going back to what you said about the office, like, I agree. I think that having this space is good for people who really like that change in environment, right? That's something that half of your workforce might need, you know, in order to just kind of reinvigorate their brains to like do their job and give them that interaction that kind of we all thrive off of. But the flexibility and the transparency too, like two of my favorite words in change management, because we were all on the same page. We never didn't know what expectations to set, what the general mood was. Like we all went through it together. And that's why I think that we were able to shift so well. Like there were no secrets, you know?
Absolutely. There's a famous quote from Alan Mulally, who was the CEO for Ford and for Boeing before that. And when he came to Ford, you know, everybody told him what they thought he wanted to hear. You know, so they tried to portray everything in a positive light. And he basically said, you can't manage a secret. You just can't manage a secret. So,
great quote.
Yeah. So give it to me, you know, be transparent. And let me know, because otherwise, how can I help you if I don't know? So, you know, kudos to you on the transparency, because that is part of the trust building. If people aren't transparent, then they don't know. And that just that can feed things very negatively. So right. The transparency, that's huge. I just did a session with a group on trust. And basically, I gave them 10 trust behaviors. And they were everything from be vulnerable, be honest, right, wrongs, you know, you name it. And the two that they identified as the top two for this group was be honest and be transparent. And sometimes the ones that get identified are the ones sometimes that are missing in a group, you know, so it can be telling sometimes. And we ask them, you know, if there's one up there that, you know, or one that's not up there, you know, fill it in, but it can be an interesting exercise.
Yes, definitely. And I know we've talked before on these podcasts and outside these, it's a challenging job for leaders or anybody in the company, because as much as you are transparent, people bring their own insecurities, as we know, sure. You know, from home, from their childhood. So as much mm-hmm. as you can do, sometimes it doesn't work, which kind of brings me to our next question. What do you do when you work with these clients and you have like an important leader that is productive, gets work done, but is very resistant to change? How do you handle that?
Yeah, that is a great question. So I typically ask groups that I work with a question. Human beings, are they logical beings with emotion? Or emotional beings with logic?
We Another only have question. 15 minutes, Lynn.
All right. Well, I'll give you the answer. I'll give you the answer. Yeah. We are human beings. And remember this, folks. We are emotional beings with logic. And it does, you know, and some people will argue with me. Oh, no, I'm very rational. And yes, I'm sure you are. But the further we are to something, typically, the more emotional we get. We can become less emotional or more objective if we're way over here, but sometimes the closer we get to some things, the more emotional. And we can rationalize anything. I mean, I could rationalize any decision, and I'm part of this, but it's important to recognize that we are these emotional beings, and sometimes our emotions are at our core. They drive our thoughts, which drive our behavior. So sometimes it's so change. So I'll give you an example, right? I was talking with a gentleman who had just started working with an organization in a leadership type role. Well, he made a change in the organization. He changed the coffee maker. And not only did he change the coffee maker from a Keurig to a Nescafe, whatever cappuccino thing, but he moved it. Wow. He not only changed it, but he moved it.
My blood is boiling.
Right? Who does that? Who does that? So as you can imagine, there were some people that just were not happy with, okay, who does this? Who comes in here and makes those kind of changes? But those heavy coffee drinker lovers, the Keurig, they were not happy. The people that, you know, the tea drinkers, they were like, whatever. But so again, that's what drives our behaviors, our thoughts, etc. And a good cup of coffee.
It's interesting. When you said it at the beginning, I was going into my Dateline mode. Everybody who knows me here knows I'm a true crime fanatic. And I'm like, you're too close to the case. You won't be able to make executive decisions. It's too emotional for you. You knew her. Like,
you got to get the music playing. Right? Bum, yeah. Bum, bum.
Don't get them started. David will come through in a hot second with some like, dun, dun. I don't know what our copyrights are, but.
Yeah. They won't be able There's to recognize
of, it. All sorts it. Of crime. Music that exists out there. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You don't realize sometimes the littlest change could cause a massive ripple effect.
All the hugest disruption, right?
Thank you, David. That's a good one, Dave. I like that. So, Lynn, as we wrap up, because our hour is almost over, if you can believe it, what are some tips that you can share with our listeners who want to make a change? What can they do to help lead their people through it?
Yeah. So again, I think I go back to first off, remember that humans are emotional beings with logic. So if once you kind of recognize that and understand that that is what fuels the thoughts and the behaviors, because any change, honestly, the change, so I use a couple change models. I use Bridges, which is almost like a grief model, because with any change, we're giving up something, we're letting something go. And then we kind of get into this weird mode, the neutral zone, or it's more like a limbo, before we get to that new beginning. And that's what Bridges talks about. And it's really about all those different emotions. So there's shock, there's denial, there's fear, confusion, anger, resentment, you know, all these things, defensiveness, you know, we've all gone through them. And that's when people are closed-minded. Okay, they're not going to be open to the change. So you've really got to set the context for why the change is necessary. And I literally was just having this conversation this morning with the group that I was leading, because they said there were a couple things that were missing. So it's one. So the Bridges model is one, and that's about understanding the emotions. The other model that I use for change is Kotter's 8 steps of change. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but the number one step for creating change is creating a sense of urgency. Because if people don't understand the urgency and the need for the change, then why should I change? Sorry, I'm
Maria pointing. I was going to say to the people who can't see it, Maria is like hitting the nail on the figurative head.
I had a personal experience, well, a professional personal experience of that a few weeks ago when we were rolling out a new feature, and I felt we didn't talk about the importance enough. So that's interesting. So I apologize for interrupting your thought, but
no, I think that's a good example. Yeah. You got to create the sense. People need to understand the why behind the change, because we all have a different propensity of change. And for anyone, you know, I certified in behaviors and motivation analysis. So some of us move through change better than others. And that's important to recognize as well. You know, the group that I did this morning, you know, we kind of did the DISC model. I did a non-scientific version of DISC with them, but a lot of them are in that S quadrant where they're looking for stability. You know, they're not looking for the change unless it makes sense, unless you can clarify that. So that's a huge thing. Set the context of the why and create that sense of urgency for the change. Understand that it is emotional for people. And I've been using an assessment. I open it up to your listeners. It's a new assessment. It's unlike most. Most assessments are cognitively based. So that means that the person has time to think about the information, and then they have also time to think about their response. This particular assessment is so quick, and it's kind of fun. It only takes like 5 minutes to do, but it's a bunch of pictures just flashing, and it really gets into the emotion. It measures these 4 areas of self, material, social, and spiritual, and then 3 different levels of foundational, experiential, and aspirational. And it will really give you an indication of how people are feeling about the change, and can you move that change in a productive manner. That's what I would say.
You're making me think now. So do you think there is a direct correlation with having a growth mindset with being able to embrace change? So if somebody has 100% growth mindset, I don't know if there's such a thing as 100% growth mindset.
Let's say there is.
We're going to go with it.
Do you think those people are the ones that are fine with change, and people that it's almost like change is learning and growing? To me, that's how I see it.
I completely agree. Absolutely. To think that change doesn't exist is
yes.
Not right.
Yes. So I know back in the days, you know, you would do the same thing every day for years, and that's how it went. But now it's like things are changing by minute. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I don't I find it hard to think that, and I know there are a lot of people that are very like comfortable, but for people that don't realize that you have to really embrace change. And I understand, obviously, there's a bunch of layers to it. And and I know that probably a lot of leaders, I could look at a lot of my past mistakes or my learning experiences where maybe I didn't articulate the why of the change enough. So maybe these people, so I'm kind of just talking out loud, these people could have had a growth mindset, but because I did not articulate the why of the change, or I didn't anticipate that this change, like you were saying, Lynn, of the coffee machine, that would have a big change. Like when we would hire a new person, wasn't necessarily, you know, a person that was managing people, but people would look, okay, what does this new person mean? This person has better skills than I do. This person is more experienced. So what does that mean for me? You know, so it's very interesting.
You bring
all
up
the layers you just peeled back, Maria. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Right? And that ties to the great resignation right now, what we're talking about. So when you talked about change and like mergers, acquisitions, yes. But everything that's going on with the great resignation, there's that constant churn. That's change. And you have to orient people on and off the team. So you kind of got to create that time to one, you know, orient the team to why are we here? What's the purpose? What are we looking to achieve? And then build trust. And then how do we get it done? And let's, you know, let's get going, you know. But it sounds like you've been able, from what I've heard from you today, at least you were able to do that, especially during the pandemic, you know, create that cohesive unit of unison and movement. So kudos.
Absolutely. I think, you know, we certainly have wound up stronger at the other end. So, which is, you know, fantastic. But I certainly have, as I mentioned, I could see many examples where I did not communicate change well enough and like the reason why. So I have learned from this session, as I always like to learn. Actually, Learner is my second of my Clifton Strength Finder. That's yours also too, Lynn?
I have Learner in there. Yes, I do.
Okay. Yes. So I always like to get some good tips from this stuff. So Jocelyn, take it away.
Yeah, you got it. Thank you, Lynn, so much. Cause I agree. There's so many like thoughtful insights, and change will always be a heavy, like change management will always be a heavy lift, but that's why there are Lynn Turners in the world, people. So, you know, just make sure you're thinking about it so that your people are ready for it. Speaking of being ready for it, it's time for our TTA 10 segment.
Ooh.
It's the TTA 10, 10 final questions for our guests.
Oh, she gave us a sprinkler this time, everybody. I love it. All right, Lynn. Well, listen, we did talk about this right before we started recording the episode. So the TTA 10 is some fun questions, playful questions that I'm going to ask you, 10 in total. See what we did there. You have 90 seconds to answer these questions rapid fire.
Okay.
If you get the answers, the questions answered in 90 seconds or less, we will celebrate you in the form of the best sound effect compilation ever from our producer, David. We also have the same award if you do not do it in 90 seconds, but it's a little, you know.
Yeah,
but like still that. Very fun and all meant in a good-hearted nature. So, are you ready, Lynn?
I am ready.
Awesome. David, you give me the countdown, and I am ready to go.
90 seconds on the clock, starting now.
Lynn, what is your favorite ice cream topping?
Hot fudge.
Good one. What is your favorite thing to do to unwind at the end of the day?
Drink.
Girl, same. Garden gnomes, cute or creepy?
Creepy.
Beachfront or mountains?
Within a drive of each other.
Which planet in our solar system is closest to the sun?
Mercury.
What is your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, whatever they're playing.
If you could rid the world of one thing today, what would it be?
It war.
In The Little Mermaid, what is the name of Ariel's pet fish?
It's not Nemo, but...
No, that was
I'm
going to
go
one.
With Nemo.
If you could eat one meal for the rest of your life, what would you choose?
Dessert.
And what is your favorite color?
Favorite color, I'm going to say purpley blue.
purpley blue. All right. All right, David, that's our 10 questions. What is the verdict, please?
Lynn, you have completed the TTA 10 in a time of 1 minute 16 seconds, well below the threshold of 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Lynn, you are a TTA 10 champion. You may shout this news from the rooftops, dazzle your friends at cocktail parties, and include it on your resume. Now that you've achieved this coveted honor, you will be respected and loved by captains of industry, heads of state, social media influencers, and Uber drivers. The sun will shine brighter for you, food will taste better, and life will have new meaning. Congratulations, Lynn. You are a TTA 10 champion.
Yay. Excellent.
Thank
you so much, Lynn.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to finally meet you.
And you. Thank you for the dancing.
Oh, anytime. You come back anytime, Lynn.
Awesome.
Okay. For more information on Lynn or bringing change management into your organization, visit us at thetrainingassociates.com. We'll see you later.